Welcome to the Tell Us Something podcast. I'm Mark Moss, founder and executive director of Tell Us Something. We are currently looking for storytellers for the next Tell Us Something storytelling event. The theme is Hold My Beer. If you'd like to pitch a story for consideration, please call 406-203-4683. You have 3 minutes to leave your pitch. The pitch deadline is December 7th. I look forward to hearing from you. This week on the podcast,
I distinctly thought about the dollhouse in the corner, the horse mural on the wall. And so when I started to wake up from that nighttime nap, I was really surprised to look around and see thorn branches instead of that childhood bedroom wall.
The meadows are there. They're up to our knees in color and riotous glory. It's a misty day. So we aren't hot, it's cool. And the mist has made the flowers scream at us. It's glorious. And I'm hiking with my daughter.
Thank goodness for the open mouthpiece, right? Yeah. So I'm throwing up everywhere. And all of a sudden, the crowd of kids just falls completely silent. And a kid goes, hey, that's my grandma's costume that you're throwing up in.
Three storytellers share their true personal story on the theme, Never Again. Their stories were recorded live in person in front of a packed house on September 18th, 2024 at the George and Jane Dennison Theater in Missoula, Montana. Tell Us Something acknowledges that we gather on the ancestral lands of the Salish, Kootenai, and Pendele peoples. These lands have been inhabited for millennia, shaped by the wisdom and stewardship of the First Nation peoples. We acknowledge the historical and ongoing trauma inflicted upon Indigenous communities, including the forcible removal from their lands, the destruction of their cultures, and the systemic injustices that continue to persist. As we honor the Indigenous people who have called this place home, let us commit to learning from their traditions and values. A tangible way to do that, if you live in Missoula, Montana, is to visit the Missoula Public Library. On Friday, November 1st, Missoula Public Library hosts a First Friday event highlighting Native art and culture, showcasing the library's permanent collection. That event kicks off 4 weeks of programming celebrating Native American Heritage Month. A tool TB will be installed on the Harrison Children's Library. They will unveil an exhibit of the Salish Kootenai Seasonal Round that gives children a new interactive learning tool. They will also debut a new collection of Indigenous books and materials. Stop by the library or visit MissoulaPublicLibrary.org to learn more. Tell Us Something stories sometimes have adult themes. Storytellers sometimes use adult language. Jessie Ballard and her family are stranded in the Kenyan desert where they faced danger, dehydration, and exhaustion. Come along with Jessie on a wild adventure filled with unforgettable memories in a story she calls The Best Walker. Thanks for listening.
I want you to think back to the last time your car broke down or you were riding in a car that broke down. Think through the steps involved to being rescued. I imagine it was a stressful situation, but probably pretty simple to get rescued. A phone call to AAA, wave down a passerby, call a buddy, and maybe within a few hours, you were safely back at home or in a safe place at least. Now I want to take you back in time to late 1980s in a remote area of northern Kenya. Myself, I'm around 8 years old. My younger brother's around six. We're with my parents, and we had just finished visiting family in a remote area of northern Kenya. We were living in Nairobi, the capital city at the time. We'd finished our visit, we'd packed up our double cab white Nissan, and we were well on our way back to Nairobi. We happened to, hours after our travel, we ended up in this area, part of our travel, called the Chalbi Desert. Chalbi is the Gabra word, Gabra being one of the groups of people that lives in the area, for dry and salty. So I just want you to imagine dry and salty for miles and miles around you. Well, I've set up how remote it is, but here we are driving along, and another car happens to come by us, and they stop, and it's Mr. and Mrs. Anderson, family friends. Wow, what are the odds of that? So my parents strike up a conversation. I think my brother and I are just playing in the back seat, and then they wave, and off the Andersons go. My dad goes to restart the car. Nothing happens. We all jump out of the car and start waving at the Andersons, who by this point are miles down the road in a dust cloud of dry and salty. Well, that didn't work. My dad tried valiantly to get the car started, but it wasn't going to happen. So he makes the decision. He's going to be the hero dad and is going to embark out on his own and find help. My mother, sitting in a pickup truck with an 8-year-old and a 6-year-old, said, "Nah, we are all coming with you." So we gathered the supplies, the few supplies we had, which included a jerry can. For those of you not familiar with that phrase, it's kind of a big plastic or metal container that's often in the back of a car on safari with extra gas, or in our case, with extra water. So my mom grabs the jerry can and we start our walk through the Chalbi Desert. At first, my brother and I think this is great. We're skipping, we're throwing rocks, we're having a grand old time. What an adventure we're on. Eventually, the charm starts to wear off. It's made extra irritating by my mother banging on the now empty jerry can. Boom, 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 over and over and over and over. "Mom, stop that. That's annoying." I pause here to have you think of walking a Montana trail where you might encounter something like a bear. What is it that you do when you're on a trail where you might encounter a bear? You make noise, right? You've got your bear bells. You're ready with your bear spray. My mother knew that we might encounter lions or some other wildlife, and the boom, boom, boom was out of protection for us. But of course, I was childlike, blissfully ignorant to that and just annoyed at the incessant bang, bang, bang. So we're walking and walking and walking, and eventually the sun starts to go down, and we are exhausted, so tired. My dad managed to grab some thorn branches and build an enclosure for us to rest in. I doubt my dad and my mom were doing much resting, but I was so tired, and I felt so safe in that enclosure that I conked out. I fell fast asleep. Even though I was only 8, I have this distinct memory of feeling like I was back in my childhood bedroom, even though I was in the middle of the desert in a thorn bush enclosure. I could distinctly thought about the dollhouse in the corner, the horse mural on the wall. And so when I started to wake up from that nighttime nap, I was really surprised to look around and see thorn branches instead of that childhood bedroom wall. So as I was waking up, I start to hear this sound of cowbells in the distance. Ding, 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 ding. So we're all listening, and we know that if there's cowbells, there's humans, there's civilization. So we get up and we follow the sound of the cowbells. And that leads us to this now abandoned old tented camp. But it wasn't totally abandoned. There was a caretaker there watching over the property, and he welcomed us in. He pulled out some cots for us to lay on, and again, we just fell fast asleep. Sleep through the night, and as we're there, he's also giving us cup after cup of tea or chai so that we could get hydrated. And as we're waking up, I remember this, what's probably an old wives' tale, to test if you're dehydrated or not, where if you lift the skin on the back of your hand, if it sticks together, supposedly you're dehydrated. And I thought, oh, I've been walking in a desert. I bet I'm dehydrated. And sure enough, when I lifted that skin, it stuck together. So keep that tea coming, get rehydrated. But as I'm waking up that next day, I hear another strange sound. It's little kids yelling, and I can hear the thunk, thunk, thunk of rocks being thrown up into this tree near my bed. And I look up, and there's a giant snake up in the tree. I was pretty scared, but these kids just kept at it and kept chucking the rocks. And eventually that snake slithered away. So big sigh of relief there. So now we had to figure out how in the world we were going to get home. Well, this old camp happened to have an old ham radio. The problem was it had a dead battery. So these two Samburu askaris, guards, who were part of the staff at the camp, decided they were going to book it back to our car and get the battery out of the car that we could hook up to the radio and call for help. They did that trip so quick. For my brother and I, it felt like hundreds and hundreds of miles, but they were back real fast. So we hooked up the radio, and my dad gets on there, and we hear this crackling over the radio and another familiar voice. It's our neighbor from back in Nairobi placing the order for her tented camp, a dozen eggs and a bag of flour. What are the odds that it would be Mrs. Cotter on the radio? But eventually, my dad got through to friends who were wonderful and volunteered to drive up and help get the car and get my dad and the family back home. Well, my parents decided that another long drive was not the best thing for antsy little me and my brother. So they managed to make a connection with a local pilot who had a little Cessna plane, likely something like in our story earlier. And he flew into this remote area, no landing strip, just a bumpy road, a bumpy field that he landed in. And myself and my brother and my mom loaded into this tiny little plane, which for me was so exciting. We were going to fly in this cool little plane and get home. My brother was prone to car sickness, which also translates to air sickness. So he's in that plane just trying to hold it together, and my mom's doing her best to distract him from wanting to vomit by pointing out things that were flying by. So we're flying along, and my mom sees this waterfall in the distance. "Look, Ben, look at that cool waterfall." Our daredevil pilot decides, "You want to see the waterfall? Let's go!" Hangs a really sharp right, pulls the plane right up against the waterfall, which did not help the air sickness at all. Eventually, we make it back home. My dad makes it back home, and we are safely under the roof in our own house. And I'm back in my bed with my dollhouse in the corner, the horse mural on the wall. I'm sure my parents were in their room going, "Never again." But for me, I had a trophy proudly up on my bookshelf, given to me by my parents, a little trophy that on the bottom read, "Best Walker." Thank you.
Thanks, Jesse. Jesse is a perinatal care coordinator who moonlights as an actor and a birth doula. She lives in Missoula with her husband, two kids, and two cats. In her next story, Betsy Funk hikes with her adult daughter, Kelsey, in Glacier National Park on what would become a grueling hike for her daughter. Kelsey's determination and love for the outdoors pushed them through tears and exhaustion. Betsy calls her story Glacier Calls. Thanks for listening.
I'm from Glacier Country. And for those of you who know Glacier Country, you know that the park calls to us. And often that means we're compelled to go visit her. This is happening this one week, and I was feeling it and needing to go back to Glacier, back to hike. So I made the decision to go one day. I called a friend. I said, "Let's go hiking." She said, "Yeah, I'm up for it. Let's go." I said, "We'll have to start early because we want to get back in time." She had a baby, and we wanted to make sure the baby got back in time to get some rest. And she says, "Yeah, no problem. I got this." And so I went and picked her up. We loaded up the baby backpack, the snacks, all the accoutrement of going to Glacier. Of course, we brought our layers and our bear spray and headed up to Glacier to our favorite hike. Now, my friend is my daughter. And she has her son, and she's excited about going on this hike because she's been doing this with me since I was carrying her in the backpack up the hike. She did it with me when she was a teenager and says, I will go no farther. And she also did it with me and kicked my ass up the switchbacks. So we know it's her favorite. She has a real passion for this part of the park, as do I. So we get to the trailhead. It's about 8 in the morning. We decide we're going to start early. This particular trail takes, on a slow day, about 6 hours to do. It's not extraordinarily hard, but it is touted as one of the most beautiful hikes in the park. So as we're unloading her son, and I'm unloading her, and we're getting things ready to go, I look over at her, and I say, Kels, how you doing? She said, I'm good, Mom. I said, so you're sure about this? She says, Mom, I got this. I said, great. Okay, you're sure of it? Let's go. So the trail drops off the Going to the Sun Road, and it goes for about a mile into this subalpine forest. And as you step on that trail, the sounds of the road drop away, and you're surrounded by the moistness of bare grass and ferns, a soft foot underneath, and it gradually hikes uphill into these beautiful mountains that compelled us to go and call us. So as we're hiking, I'm realizing this is taking Kelsey a little longer than I thought it would. Now, she's carrying her son, and that's okay. So I turn around and say, you sure you're up for this? She says, oh, I got this, Mom. So I'm fine. About, I don't know, I want to make a guess, but a mile to a mile and a half in on the trail, it's becoming pretty apparent to me that this is going to be a long day. She's taking a while, and I guess this is where I tell you that my daughter is in 6-plus years of living with and gradually dying from glioblastoma multiforme, which is brain cancer. It's terminal. She's been through 2 brain surgeries, 5.5 years of chemotherapy, and a full-term pregnancy. She's a fighter, and she wants to do this hike. She loves this hike. But when you look at her, you realize that cancer, it doesn't take you all at once. Cancer takes you bit by bit. One piece at a time. And I've been watching for over 6 years my daughter die in front of my eyes, one piece at a time. So we're hiking along the trail, and I'm starting to be concerned. It's taking her a while. She's gained a lot of weight with all the treatment. She's slow. She's tired. And I ask her, Kels, we can stop at the Y. It's okay. We've been here. It's wonderful. She says, no, Mom, I got this. So we get to the Y, where she knows the next thing she's going to see are these glorious meadows filled with arnica and Indian paintbrush, mountain aster. And she has a degree in horticulture, so she's jazzed. She wants to see this. So we get to the Y, and I say, okay, we got a choice. We could stop here, go back, have our lunch. It's great. We've seen wonderful things. We can go on up to Pegan, or we could head over Sai Pass. And she says, Mom, Sai Pass, that's the only option. I got this. So we head up. The meadows are there. They're up to our knees in color and riotous glory. It's a misty day, so we aren't hot. It's cool. And the mist has made the flowers scream at us. It's glorious. And I'm hiking with my daughter. So from there, we open up and we go through some beautiful waterfalls and creeks, and we get to the switchbacks. Now, these switchbacks are no fake-o. They're real switchbacks. They go and they go, and then there's the false summit, and then you go some more. At this point, we've been on the trail twice as long as it would take anybody else to be on the trail. I said it was a misty day, so there were very few people on the trail, and those people had long since passed us. where I thought we'd be done at about 2 p.m, it was becoming pretty apparent that we might be down after dark. We go to start the switchbacks, and it's even more apparent that Kelsey is weakening. She's struggling. About every 10 meters, she has to stop. Let's feed the baby, Mom. Let's take a rest. Kelsey, we can go back anytime. I got this, Mom. It's okay. I got this. On these switchbacks, she finally allowed me to take the baby. I carried him on my back. Now, you're wondering, what's he doing? Well, he was just hanging out. He was cool. He was wrapped up all snuggly warm, and I just kept handing food back there. He was good. So we're hiking up the switchbacks, waiting for Kels, checking in. How you doing? I'm okay. I got it, Mom. Take the next switchback. How are you doing? Mom, I've got this. We eventually make it to the top. Along our way, we'd pick up a couple of heart stones. And as is tradition in my family, we put the heart stones on this enormous cairn that stands at the top of the pass. And we put them there to honor those who have come before us and to guide those who come after us. And we hold each other, and we celebrate, and we embrace, and we feed the baby more food. And then I ask her, Kels, if we go back, it's shorter. We know where we've been, and we're okay. It's an extra mile, mile and a half to go down the other side. Mom, I didn't come here to quit. I've got this. So I take a deep breath. I say, I'll take the baby. She goes, oh, my baby. I said, okay. She was a stubborn one. So she carried the baby. As we drop down this trail, if you've never been there, you walk through hanging gardens of monkey flowers and orchids, all screaming in riotous color in the high alpine, saying, come have sex with me, please. They're beautiful. And she's relishing in it. She's in rapture. She's loving this. At the same time, her legs are shaking. She's worn through one pair of leggings because she's large and her legs have chafed. She's bleeding. I give her another pair of leggings. She's begun to wore through them. She falls. She breaks her poles. I ask if I can take Otto. She says, nope, I got this, Mom. So we continue down, shaky, knowing it's getting late. There's nobody on the trail at this point. The clouds are settling. It's getting scary. And it's Bear 30. If anybody knows what Bear 30 is, well, basically, the rule is stay 100 yards away from a bear, right? Well, I have someone with me who's having trouble walking on the trail. And when we see the full-size grizzly bear 10 feet off the trail, and I ask her, can you bushwhack? She says, Mom, I don't think I can. I don't think I can hold myself up. We gotta walk on the trail. I take a breath and I say, okay. So there's this full-size grizzly, 10 feet off the trail. The trail goes on a switchback above the bear and below the bear. So we're gonna cut across a little field to try to avoid doing it twice, right? So I tell Kels, all right, here it is, Kels. I've got the bear spray. And I'm standing with the bear spray. And I go, you walk behind me. And she goes, Mom. I said, just walk behind me because I'm looking at that bear. And I say right to his face, she's not going to die today. Not today. And she makes it. She gets the other side. I start to back up, still holding the bear spray. The bear shakes his head and huffs at me, walks over to a pine tree and does blue the bear. We made it. We continue down the trail, and it's clear Kelsey is truly struggling. A ranger has been sent in to help us, although what could he do but help her up? Because at this point, I'm given the baby. Her modality of getting down this trail, bleeding and shaky and very unstable, is to sit on every step, slide on her ass and have us help her up. And then she wobbles her way to the next one, sits and slides. It's getting later and later. And I'm thinking we need to call somebody in. And I ask her, should we call for help? She says, Mom, I gotta do this. I've got this. We make it to the bottom. It's glorious. I'm relieved. I'm crying. The baby's asleep. And there's at the bottom of this trail, there's this beautiful path that goes down on the river. And I go and put my feet in because I'm an old woman and my feet hurt. And she goes and puts her feet in. She's, oh, this doesn't. This won't do, Mom. And she goes because she's bloody and she sits right in the creek. And she goes, you know, Mom, I don't think I'll ever be able to do that again. And I looked right at her and I said, you know what, Kels? You got this. Thank you.
Thanks, Betsy. Betsy Funk lives in the Flathead Valley where, surrounded by mountains, she raised her family. She believes stories are the result of the mischief, wonder, and magic of life, and of a willingness to be witness to all of it. To see photos of Kelsey and Betsy on their hike, visit tellussomething.org. Coming up after the break.
Thank goodness for the open mouthpiece, right? Yeah. So I'm throwing up everywhere. And all of a sudden, the crowd of kids just falls completely silent. And a kid goes, hey, that's my grandma's costume that you're throwing up in.
Remember that the next Tell Us Something event is January 13th. You can learn about how to pitch your story and get tickets at tellussomething.org. Thank you to our story sponsors who help us to pay our storytellers. The Good Food Store. For more than 50 years, The Good Food Store has been Missoula's homegrown independent source for natural, organic, and locally sourced food. Learn more at goodfoodstore.com. And thanks to story sponsor Parkside Credit Union, whose mission it is to be the best place for people of Western Montana to get a loan. Learn more at parksidefcu.org. Thanks to our accessibility sponsor, SBS Solar, allowing us to provide American Sign Language interpretation at the live event. SBS Solar stands at the forefront of the solar energy revolution with over 30 years of industry experience, specializing in custom solar design and installation for both residential and commercial applications. SBS Solar is committed to promoting energy independence and environmental sustainability. Learn more at sbslink.com. And thanks to our workshop sponsor, Wide Tide Designs, helping us to feed our storytellers at the group workshop. Wide Tide Designs is a woman-led art and design studio that produces colorful spaces and stunning artwork that fosters positivity and empowers individuals to be their best selves. Learn more at widetidedesigns.com. Thanks to our media sponsors, MissoulaEvents.net, where you find all the good things that are happening all over Missoula, and Missoula Broadcasting Company. Learn more about them and listen online at MissoulaBroadcastingCompany.com. Thanks to our in-kind sponsors, Float Missoula. Learn more at floatmsla.com. And Joyce of Tile. Learn about Joyce at joyceoftile.com. All right, let's get back to the stories. You are listening to the Tell Us Something podcast. I'm Mark Moss. Closing out this episode of the Tell Us Something podcast, Sid Lang is a summer camp counselor at a small, long-running camp in Colorado. Listen as she meets a special individual one summer and watch their friendship blossom amidst laughter, shared stories, and a whole lot of fun. Sid calls her story Lovesick. Thanks for listening.
I'm standing in the middle of a large dining room, and I'm in a bit of a pickle. The problem is there is a cute girl sitting in the corner, and I am in Florissant, Colorado. Well, actually, not in Florissant. Florissant, as of the last census, had 149 people who lived there. It's technically an unincorporated community. And I'm in Florissant, but not really Florissant. I'm actually 30 minutes up a dirt road in the middle of nowhere. And I'm in this dining hall, and I see this girl, and she's sitting in the corner. And I want to go sit by her. She's got this wild mullet that I later learned she's cut herself with a river knife on the Grand Canyon. And she's got these vibrant eyes. And I want to sit next to her, but I'm a little bit nervous. And I'm nervous because on the drive out from Montana to Colorado, I've lost my voice somewhere. Wyoming's long, takes a long time to drive through there. I'm sure somewhere my voice has taken a stop and not come with me. I get to Colorado, and I have laryngitis. And so here I am, standing in this room, trying to meet a staff of 7 people, small staff, and I can't speak. And so I'm introducing myself, scratching through words, and I'm saying, "Hi, I'm Sid, and I don't normally sound like this, and I don't know what to tell you, and I'm so happy to be here." And it's my 4th time coming to work at this outdoor education center. And we do summer camp, and we also do teaching students. And so I spend the next week during staff training trying to get to know this girl. It's not going well. I'm not really getting to know anyone because no one can hear me. And so at the end of training, we decide that we're going to go all together as a staff. We're going to go into town, the big town. And so we get in 2 separate cars, and I manage to weasel my way into the car with her. And I'm thinking, "Oh, good. Here we go. Now's my time to rock." And so we get in the cars, you know, 7-person staff team, right? 5 people in one car, 2 people in the other. Here we go. So we get in the old 2001 Subaru Outback, and she rolls down all the windows because it's August in Colorado. It's still pretty hot. She turns on the radio, and she's singing the whole drive. And my little scratchy laryngitis voice is no competition for the windows or the music. And so I'm silent the whole 2-hour car ride. We get to town, and she has this great idea. "We should go to karaoke." Like, oh, awesome. This is perfect. So I get to karaoke in Big Green Tractor. My typical karaoke song's not sounding as good as it usually does. And I'm up there, and I'm scratching through the lyrics. And I finally, as the night goes on, I get a chance to sit outside with her. And we're talking about how we both have worked at this camp, but we've worked there opposing seasons. And so we've never met before. And then she goes, "Oh, I've heard of you, though." I'm like, "Oh, God, this can't be good." And she goes, "Yeah, you're patient zero, aren't you?" I'm like, "Yep." So let's go back to 2019. It was my 2nd summer at camp, and I'm coming as the climbing director this summer. And my goal is to get students excited to sign up for my climbing program, because the more they sign up, the more I get to climb. And that's the dream job to a 19-year-old. And so here I am. I'm dressed in front of all of the kids. It's 150 kids. They're sitting in an outdoor auditorium, and I'm putting on an opening night performance. And it's this zany, wild experience. And I'm dressed head to toe in a giraffe costume. And luckily, there is a break in the giraffe costume from the top of my head to the bottom of my chin. It's got this like big giraffe muzzle, you might call it, and these big ears. And I'm in a belay system, which is a climbing term if you don't know. I'm wearing a harness, and another person's also wearing a harness, and we're kind of mocking what climbing might be like. And I have no control over if I'm moving forwards or backwards. I'm tied into a rope, and my belayer is deciding how much slack I get. And so here I am, and I'm like dancing in front of everyone. I'm so excited. I'm the giraffe, and I'm going to climb with you all summer. Come sign up. And all of a sudden, I turn to the left, and I just start spewing vomit, just out of nowhere. Thank goodness for the open mouthpiece, right? Yeah. So I'm throwing up everywhere. And all of a sudden, the crowd of kids just falls completely silent. And a kid goes, "Hey, that's my grandma's costume that you're throwing up in." And so I'm standing here in front of everybody spewing vomit and also spewing the norovirus, which took over the entire camp all summer. Looking back, it was pretty awesome. You know, kids in the dining hall, they're standing up, and 3 kids are vomiting at once in all different directions. It was a real Stand By Me moment. We had a barf tally on the side. Yeah, totally awesome. So I coined the name Patient Zero. And I'm sitting here and I'm like really going into this story, like telling her maybe more than I should. And I look over after talking about this and I'm expecting her face to be like, huh. And she looks at me with just this like excited astonishment. She goes, well, hey, that's cool. Have you heard of my character, Earl? I'm like, oh, okay, we're going to do this. Here we go. And so she starts telling me about this character named Earl, which is a bird. And the bird danced at every event. And Earl kind of sounded like this. So she's going into Earl, and then I start talking about Granny. And Granny was my other claim to fame at this establishment. Granny is an old character. She's an old woman character, and I'm working outdoor ed season at this time. And so fifth and sixth grade students from the surrounding area in Colorado, they come up, and they spend a week with myself and the other field instructors, and we replace part of their curriculum from the class. So we're teaching it and also acting it out. It's really an odd place. And so I am working out, I'm teaching the homesteading curriculum, and I'm Granny, dressed head to toe in a bonnet. And Granny, I just fell in love with Granny. So I spent 2 months being Granny. And Granny sounded like this. Hey, kids, welcome on down. Here we go. We're going to churn some butter. And Granny had a really rough season because Granny had Giardia. And if you don't know what Giardia is, it is a parasite you get from drinking unclean water. And Giardia really stays until you take care of it. So Giardia Granny is running around teaching these kids in her bonnet and her homesteading dress. She keeps going, Granny's got dysentery. Where's the chamber pot? So at this point, everybody has heard about patient zero and also Granny with Giardia. And I'm swapping stories with this girl, her name is Sophia, and we're going back and forth, and just doubling over in laughter outside of this karaoke bar. And we decide that what we need to do is bring Earl and Granny together. And there's a perfect opportunity for that. We have, in this outdoor ed season, what's called the hoedown. And I can guarantee you, you have never been to anything like the High Trails hoedown. It is magical and wild. All the students are packed into a small auditorium. The teachers are there, wide-eyed, confused. They're like, this is what you do? What? And all the staff comes in. We're dancing around in different costumes, and we put on a performance. And every night, the performance looks different because we don't plan it. And it goes on for like 2 hours, these kids dancing at the hoedown. And Granny and Earl come out, and they just steal the show. And for the next 2 months, Granny and Earl steal the show every single week. Granny and Earl spend a lot of time together. Granny and Earl also sit in Sophia, fall in love throughout the entirety of that season. Sophia's mullet slowly grows out. My voice slowly comes back. Thank goodness, good old Larry's kicked the curb. And we moved back to Missoula together. And Granny and Earl still live in Missoula. We've been here for 2.5 years. And we have a pretty darn good time. And I would say we still know how to throw a pretty dang good hoedown.
Thanks, Sid. Sydney Lang grew up in Olympia, Washington, and has been living in Grand Old Missoula, Montana, on and off for the past 7 years. She attended the University of Montana, where she studied communication and climate change. She spends much of her time climbing big rocks and zooming through the trees on her bike. She has been working in the outdoor education world for many years, both in Montana and Colorado. Sid loves to eat bubblegum ice cream, practice slackline by the river, play on local trails, and cook dinner with friends. Thanks for listening to the Tell Us Something podcast. Remember that the next Tell Us Something event is January 13th. The theme is Hold My Beer. Learn how to pitch your story and get tickets at tellussomething.org.